Welcome, beloved family members. It's so great to have you joining us for today's conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to getting into this one.
Because, you know, history tells us that if you really want to change the world, you basically need three specific things, right? You need a megaphone, massive numbers, and overwhelming force.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the traditional formula for influence is almost always visibility plus coercion.
Right, exactly. You have to be the loudest one in the room, or, you know, you need the biggest army to enforce your will. So as a beloved family member listening right now, you might just naturally assume that any blueprint for global transformation would start by gathering as much political or social capital as possible.
Which is the logical assumption, yeah.
But today, we are actually looking at a framework that claims the exact opposite. We're getting into a really fascinating sermon message based on the book of Matthew, specifically chapter 5, verses 13 through 16.
Yeah, and this sermon message unpacks the teachings of Pastor Lee Kuhyun at Saryongro Church. The central focus here is the true identity of a Christian as salt and light in the world.
And the core mission of our exploration today is discovering how a tiny minority can actually change the world, not through force or like loud declarations, but simply through the power of their everyday existence.
Right, because Pastor Lee argues that true world-altering influence doesn't require a megaphone at all. It requires this quiet, almost imperceptible existence.
Which completely flips the script. I mean, the world tells us we need power and noise to make an impact. How does this sermon message justify completely ignoring that?
Well, it starts by looking at the historical context. Because the world at the time these words were originally spoken was completely obsessed with force. We're talking about the first century under the Roman Empire.
Oh, yeah. The Pax Romana, right?
Exactly. But the Roman peace wasn't maintained by people just, you know, being nice to each other. It was maintained by brutal military occupation, heavy taxation, crushing any kind of dissent.
Brutal force. So the Jewish people of that era were understandably expecting a Messiah who would operate by those exact same rules. They wanted a military liberator.
They wanted a zealot, someone to gather this overwhelming, flashy majority and overthrow Rome by force. They expected a massive clash of empires.
But Jesus didn't do that. The sermon message points out that he completely bypassed the political elites, the wealthy influencers, all the military strategists.
He really did. Instead, he chose this remarkably small, marginalized group of people. I mean, Galilean fishermen, tax collectors, common laborers.
Right. He didn't build an army. He gathered a tiny minority who had literally zero existing power structures.
And Pastor Lee's argument suggests this was highly intentional. This specific group was uniquely positioned to understand a completely different method of influence, one that's rooted in the Eight Beatitudes.
Which focus on humility, mercy, and peacemaking, rather than coercion. Okay, let's unpack this, because Pastor Lee highlights a specific linguistic detail here that, it kind of shifts the entire paradigm.
The grammar of it, right.
Yeah. Jesus looks at this marginalized group, and he doesn't say, hey, here is a 10-step training program so you can eventually become the salt of the earth.
Right. It's not a command to try harder.
Exactly. He simply declares, you are the salt of the earth. It's just a statement of reality. It's about their very existence, not their effort.
What's fascinating here is the sheer psychological relief in that grammatical choice. I mean, worldly influence demands this constant, exhausting striving.
Oh, man, it really does.
You constantly have to manufacture your relevance, right?
Yeah.
Curating your image, forcefully pushing your agenda. But the theology in the sermon message suggests that spiritual influence operates more like, well, like a law of physics.
Law of physics.
Yeah. Think about a lit candle. It doesn't have to strain its muscles or try really hard to cast out darkness. Its mere existence simply alters the environment.
Oh, I love that. It's like the difference between someone trying desperately to prove they are cool versus someone who just has that quiet, natural confidence.
Exactly. True influence flows naturally from just being.
It's so liberating, honestly. You don't have to forcefully manufacture your influence. Like, I think of it as a chemical catalyst in the laboratory. A catalyst doesn't try to force a reaction through brute strength.
You don't hit it with a hammer.
Right. You just introduce the molecular structure into a volatile environment, and it instantly changes the nature of that room. It lowers the activation energy required for change.
And that's precisely what the sermon message implies about internalizing the Beatitudes. If a person genuinely possesses a deep poverty of spirit or a truly merciful disposition, Their mere presence acts as that catalyst.
They drop the relational tension in a hostile room without even saying a single word.
Yes. But Pastor Lee's sermon message doesn't just leave this in the abstract realm of existing. He roots it into very practical, everyday elements. Salt and light.
Which are both absolutely essential. And they actually share some key traits, right?
They do. First off, they're both preventative. Salt prevents biological decay, and light prevents physical darkness.
And they both have an incredible economy of scale. Like, you don't need a massive amount to see a change.
Right. You don't need a stadium floodlight just to walk down a dark hallway.
Exactly. A tiny pinch of salt alters an entire pot of stew. A single match totally changes the reality of a pitch black room. And the sermon message emphasizes that they work entirely without noise, but with immense penetrating power.
Salt dissolving makes literally no sound. A ray of light through a window is totally silent. But here's the thing. Pastor Lee draws out a crucial structural difference between the two.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting.
The sequence is critical. Jesus says salt before light. And the sermon message argues this is absolutely not an accident.
Because salt represents something entirely different than light.
Exactly. Salt represents a passive, internal, unseen attitude.
Right.
To actually do its job, salt has to completely lose its own form. It dissolves.
It literally disappears.
Yes. Into the material it's preserving. Light, on the other hand, is active. It's outward, highly visible, and reveals existence.
I have to push back slightly here, though. Or at least pause. Because, wait, isn't being light way more glamorous?
Oh, of course it is.
I mean, human nature violently resists the idea of dissolving. Everyone praises a lighthouse. Everyone admires the glowing city on a hill. The light gets all the credit.
It's highly visible.
Right. But when salt does its job perfectly, nobody sees the salt. They just compliment the chef on a great meal.
Mm-hmm.
The salt gets zero glory. So naturally, anyone wanting to make an impact wants to skip the dissolving part and go straight to the shining part.
And that is exactly why the sermon message issues such a strong warning about the sequence. You have to be salt first.
Why is that foundation so crucial?
Because without that unseen foundation of ego dissolution, the internal sacrifice of the salt, your attempt to be light, is dangerous. If you try to shine without that grounding, your outward actions aren't illuminating a higher truth.
Oh, wow.
They just become a spotlight on your own resume. It turns into flashy, superficial self-promotion.
So it's basically narcissism masquerading as holiness. If I haven't done the quiet, unglamorous work, my visible good deeds are just me trying to be the loudest person in the room again.
Precisely. Which brings you right back to the worldly power dynamics we were supposed to leave behind.
That makes so much sense. So let's look closer at that unseen foundation of salt. To the people actually listening to Jesus back then, salt meant something very specific, right?
Yes. The historical context Pastor Lee provides here is crucial. Remember, the crowd on that hillside contained a lot of commercial fishermen.
And for a first century Galilean fisherman, salt wasn't just some fancy spice you sprinkle on a steak.
Not at all. It was heavy, industrial, and quite literally a matter of economic life and death.
Right, because they didn't have refrigeration.
Exactly. In the blistering heat of the Middle East, a fish starts to rot and decompose almost the second you pull it out of the water. Salt was the absolute only way to halt that biological putrefaction.
Okay, so how does the sermon message apply that historically?
Pastor Lee posits that human history, much like a fish pulled from the water, is in a state of rapid moral and spiritual decay. He points all the way back to Genesis.
With Cain and Abel, the familial murder, the rampant sin.
Right. And he argues that the world simply cannot cure its own rot. A decaying fish can't preserve itself. It needs an outside agent.
So Christians are meant to be these holy preservatives slowing down the corruption. But, I mean, that introduces a massive logistical problem.
How so?
Well, to preserve a piece of meat, the salt actually has to touch the rotting flesh. You have to rub it in.
Right.
And this is where the sermon message introduces this terrifying concept of the salt storehouse.
Ah, yes. The tragedy of hoarded salt.
It's so common. Christians just gathering with each other, creating this useless storehouse. Having a pantry full of expensive spices doesn't make your dinner taste good if you never actually put them in the soup.
That is a perfect analogy. The sermon message critiques this deeply ingrained temptation in religious communities to isolate, to equate holiness with complete separation.
Like you have to sit on top of a mountain meditating to stay pure.
Exactly. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, this entirely dismantles the idea of escapist religion. Faith isn't validated in a sterile bubble. It is proven down the mountain in the fierce reality of the secular world.
So just being a good Christian inside the four walls of a church is fundamentally missing the point of the sermon message.
Entirely. This forces the beloved family members listening to realize that their mundane, stressful workplace or their frustrating neighborhood, that is exactly the decaying environment where they are most needed.
You have to melt into that unglamorous daily grind. But okay, there is a risk there.
A huge risk.
Because if we step out of the storehouse and into the world, we might forget who we are. There's a stark warning in the sermon message about losing our flavor.
Yes. Jesus warns that if salt loses its taste, it becomes completely useless and is just thrown out to be trampled underfoot.
So what does this all mean, practically speaking? How does salt even lose its flavor?
This raises an important question about the chemistry of first century salt. The salt they used was often harvested from the Dead Sea, and unlike pure sodium chloride today, it was a raw mixture of minerals. Gypsum, carnalite, stuff like that.
So it wasn't chemically stable.
Far from it. If a merchant left a sack of this exposed to intense humidity or rain, the actual sodium chloride, the part that preserves, could completely wash away.
Oh, wow. Leaving just what behind?
Basically a pile of white powder. It looked exactly like salt. It took up the same space. But if you pasted it, it was just chalk.
Its essential essence was completely gone.
Right. And since it couldn't preserve meat anymore, they literally threw it onto pathways to keep the dust down. It was trampled.
That is a brutally vivid metaphor. Pastor Lee applies this to human behavior, doesn't he?
He does. If a Christian steps into the world and fully adopts the cutthroat logic of the world, pursuing power and status, using the exact same ruthless methods their sodium chloride has washed away.
They might still wear the label. They look the same.
Mm-hmm.
But the essence is gone. And they end up mocked by the world.
Exactly. The world recognizes a hypocrite. If you claim a higher calling but operate with pure self-centered ambition, you hold no value. You are trampled by public opinion.
So the challenge is, are we purifying our surroundings or have we lost our flavor? We have to immerse ourselves yet fiercely retain that distinct salty taste.
And retaining that flavor specifically means living out the eight Beatitudes. Sacrificing for others, caring for the weak, making peace.
It's a delicate tension. Staying in the toxic office, but operating with true meekness and mercy. You silently dissolve your ego to stop the spread of paranoia around you.
It creates a profound psychological shock of contrast. You lower the relational temperature just by refusing to play the game of coercion.
Which brings us right back to where we started. True influence comes from our existence, not our forceful efforts. We must be that unseen salt before we try to be the shining light.
We really do. We have to leave the comfortable salt storehouse and melt into the daily grind.
All while fighting to keep our unique flavor of sacrifice. It's incredibly challenging, but so profound.
It really is. And I'd love to leave the beloved family members with a final thought to mull over as they go about their week.
Please do.
Look at your calendar for the upcoming week. Identify one specific ordinary interaction or environment that feels unseasoned or difficult. A place where the decay is obvious.
We all have at least one of those on the schedule.
Right. Now, how can you silently melt into that specific space tomorrow? Not to win an argument and not to show off your light.
But just to be a quiet, preserving presence. I love that. You don't need a massive platform to alter the environment. You just need to retain your flavor.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, beloved family members, for joining us for this incredibly rich conversation. We hope you carry these truths from the sermon message out into the beautiful, messy reality of your everyday lives. Until next time.